In today's day and age, everything is about image management, isn't it? We have Facebook, we have Instagram, we have whatever we have, everything. What was that?
Twitter.
Twitter. Yeah, very much so. Everything we have is all about the image that we present. We only ever put the best photos of ourselves, our friends, our food, or our holidays. Yes. Yeah, it didn't work this time. I didn't mean to pick on him last time, but anyway. We only do the best stuff of our lives. And if we don't, our children are maybe messy or they may be dirty or whatever, but that is all about being cute, isn't it? Look how cute my children are. Look how messy they are. That's, we had a great morning this morning. The fun is in the mess. And then you've got to clean it up. You know. We are all about presenting an image. We are all about marketing ourselves. Once upon a time, marketing was only ever about a business. How do we make sure we get the most sales? How do we make sure we get more clients? What do we do with this? How do we make this business look great? How do we make this product look great? And now, we all market ourselves. And I guess we always have. But now it's just a little more obvious. So how is your image management? How are you going with that? Are you beautiful people? In that sense? Or not? When we come into church, we present an image. Regardless of what has happened on the way here, regardless of what has happened anywhere else, we come here and we're dressed up nice. We look happy. And we got it all together. We're presenting an image. We are selling ourselves to everyone else here at church. This image of what we're supposed to be. I used to, when I first became a Christian, I was a teenager, and I used to go to youth group, and whether I'd come from work, whether I'd come from home, where I just had a huge fight with my parents, or someone else, or something else was bothering me, I was depressed about something, I walked through those doors, or met my friends, and to a certain extent, I cheered up. But more than anything else, I put on a face because that's what a good Christian is. Jumping around, raising their hands while they sing, which I don't do now. And maybe it's because I used to just do it because that's what you do. I used to do all these things just to show people that I was going well. I was presenting this image. And I reckon we do it in a church better than anywhere else. We're trained from an early age. This is how we live. This is how we go in church. I pulled my child back from this step, tried to stop him from throwing his money around, because I was worried about what you would say about me as a parent. There you go. I also didn't want to disturb you. I didn't want to disturb Glenn while he's doing announcements and prayer. But to a certain extent, I'm worried about my image in front of you. I don't want sympathy, I'm just telling you how it is. So in this place of image management, I feel like this word is a word for today. This word speaks into this. And it comes from Paul's letter to the Philippians. Chapter 4, for those of you that are following along. Starting at verse 4. And it says, rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice, and the God of peace will be with you. Starts. You've heard this. If you've been in church for a while, you've heard this a couple of times. Rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I will say rejoice. It's hard. This word rejoice, we've translated it to mean joy, haven't we? We've almost translated another step and said happiness. Is happiness joy? It can flow out of joy, but it's not joy. We can be happy, but not have joy. You see, the way I imagine joy, the way I imagine it, the way I think about joy, the way I explain it to myself and explain it to other people, I put it in the same category as shalom, peace. You know, shalom is a word that means peace, yes, but it's so much more than just peace. It's a wholeness. It's feeling that sense of well-being and completeness in the midst of everything else, no matter what's going on in your life. Feeling this sense of peace and calm. That everything in this world is well. In its fullest sense, shalom carries the essence of heaven being present on earth. Just imagine everything that is with heaven. I've been talking to my year threes in RI about the Lord's Prayer. And so we get to that on earth as it is in heaven. All right, that line. I have to run through the rest. And trying to help them understand, to think about, what is it like in heaven? Where there's no sickness, there's no death, there's no tears. Everything's perfect. That is shalom. Just, it's an amazing thing to get your head around. And you can't, really, because it's just too big. Blows your mind. Joy is the same. It has the same depth of meaning. It's not just happiness. It's not just feeling good. It also carries that sense of joy and completeness and wholeness. Joy is fulfillment. No matter what is happening, you feel that sense of joy. No matter how bad your life gets, whether you can laugh or whether you actually feel happy or not, you still feel joy. Joy at who God is. Joy at who we are in God's eyes. Out of that joy, out of that sense of completeness, Paul says to us to be gentle. To be gentle with those around us. To be gentle in the way we treat each other, in the way we interact. I don't know about you, but it's pretty hard. Most of you are parents, or I was going to say, well, have been. That's not entirely accurate because you're always a parent once you are one. Have you ever had this time when you walk in the door after a long day at work and your children run up to you? If you're a child and you haven't been a parent yet, try to remember from your point of view. And your children run up to you and they're like, I want this, I want that, I want that, I just want a hug. And you're tired and you're worn out and the last thing you want almost is human contact. The last thing you want is someone else pulling at you and wanting your time. When I was at college, I saw this image, does anyone know the Lost Sheep books? Cecil the Sheep and all of them? So this guy is a minister, right? He's a pastor in a Baptist church. When he was going through college, he did this comic strip of what it's like to be a pastor. And I don't think it's just pastors, it's everyone. Where he starts the day with this full heart, right? And it's all coloured in. And then he goes and talks to someone and a little bit more empties out. Then he goes and talks to someone else and a little bit more empties out. And then he talks to someone else and a little bit more empties out. And then when he finally gets home, his heart is empty. He's got nothing left. And so the last frame in the comic strip is his child or his wife, I can't remember which now, says something to him and it's just, he just goes off his tree. I know for myself, I have maybe not gone off my tree, but it's like, go away from me, I don't need anything, I don't want anything, just give me a moment. In those moments, we're not gentle. In those moments, we're not kind. But it's not just at home, and it's not just with our kids. It's when we don't feel that sense of joy, that overwhelming joy that God gives. They're so interrelated. And they're also very interrelated with the next bit. Do not be anxious. This is the word for today's world. Anxiety afflicts this world. I reckon it's the worst disease this world at the moment is dealing with. And it's not even a virus or bacteria, but it is caught over and over and over again. We are all afflicted at some stage. You're probably afflicted now. But psychologists have come up with this way that people don't feel anxious. I don't understand how. But it's the people that aren't afflicted by anxiety so much have a tolerance for uncertainty. For a tolerance for ambiguity. And so because of that, because they have that tolerance, they're able to roll with the punches. They're able to flex and absorb the punches that come to them in their life. They're able to work with the things that go wrong. They're able to deal with those things in a better way than others. And that, to a certain extent, is a skill that's inherent in some people. Some of it's just a personality trait. Some of it is learnt, and it can be learnt to roll with the punches, to absorb. Any good AFL player, I don't know about rugby players, they just run straight into each other. There's no brains there. Especially after they've been playing for a few years. I'll just stop digging now. But any contact sport player, my image is as of an AFL player, they will move with a bump. Sometimes they move into it. But they know instinctively, because they've trained so hard, how to deal with that contact. Someone who has a tolerance for uncertainty, a tolerance for ambiguity, has learned how to do that. They've learned how to roll with it. My life, you've heard a little bit of it. I deal with anxiety all the time. I am, by personality, a peaceful person. So my personality allows me to roll with it a bit. But I'm anxious about everything. This morning was worse than normal. Especially for a Sunday. Partially because I'm speaking and I'm worried about what you're going to think of me. The image that I'm going to present. But I worry about my kids. I worry about the safety of my children. Whether they're actually going to do okay. How they're going to end up at the end of their life. Or any time in between. Now and then. I worry about you. I worry about what you think of me. I worry about my job, and whether I'm doing it well enough. I'm not asking for affirmation, I'm just telling you. Just to give you an idea of some of the things I worry about, that I get anxious about. Anxiety is an emotional thing, but it affects us spiritually. It affects us physically, with ulcers and headaches and all sorts of other things. I remember one time, I was 18, 19. I'd gone to Sky Show, River Fire, in Adelaide. But there was no river. Well, not really. So it's Sky Show. And it was Australia Day, and I went in with all my mates and my girlfriend. And my girlfriend and I had a fight, right? And I stormed off because all 18-year-olds are, I wasn't anyway, very mature. So I stormed off, got in my car and drove home. Left her behind. Yeah, great boyfriend I was. I know. I don't think even Vicky knows this story, so don't tell her. She might worry that I'll drive off on her one day. So I drove home. And then when the rest of our group got, well, not home, I went to her place so I could meet her when she got there because I felt bad. But when all of our friends got back there, she wasn't there. So I panicked. I drove up Anzac Highway. I can't think of a road here that's like it, but I drove up Anzac Highway, going into the city, panicking about her safety and where she was and what had happened to her. By the time I got to West Terrace, which is probably about a 10-minute drive, my whole body had seized up. I was driving, by the way, and my hands were like this. I could not move my fingers. I could not move my arms. I could barely move the pedals to drive, and I was driving a manual. I had to stop, get out the car, and gather myself. Stress. Amazing things it does to you. Maybe I should leave that one hanging. She No, that was kind of the beginning of the end. But so it was the early days of mobile phones. That's how old I am, guys. It's the early days of the mobile phones, and she didn't have one. I looked all over Bonython Park, up and down Heine Street, Rundle Mall, Rundle Street, all around the back streets. Me and a mate, I wouldn't go there alone. And then after I'd been doing that for about an hour or so, had a phone call from a friend that was back at her place saying she just rocked up. She went with someone else. So she was safe. And I learned a powerful lesson then. But also, like I said, I worry about all these things. I'm anxious about all these things. And there is a tip. There's a tip that good psychologists will tell you. And that is, use it as a transition time when you're driving home. So what I should do is, either before leaving work or sometime in my drive home, is I should take some time. I should take some time to debrief on the day that's gone and get ready for what's coming. Oh, that sounds like it's horrible what's coming, doesn't it? But you know what I mean. And prepare for my family so that when I'm there, I'm there. Does that make sense? So that when Hugo comes running up to me, jumps on me, I'm ready. I'm there to be his dad. Now, there are varying degrees of success on this. But this is a principle that is built on a greater principle. Something that's been around for millennia. And that is this quiet time, this time that we need to have to debrief and to deal with our stress. Glenn talked about it when he brought his chair up here a few weeks ago. Do you remember the chair? Which was that quiet time, that place. God has built this into our life. He's built it into our weeks with the Sabbath. To rest and recoup and spend time with God. You see, just spending time with ourselves and unpacking and getting ready isn't enough. Not for really big stuff. The only thing that can really get us ready for this is what Paul says next. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. Prayer is that psychology space, that in-between space that we need to deal with stuff. The only real way we can do that is by coming to God and talking to Him about it. And not just by talking, but really talking. See, I was talking to the kids this week about the Lord's Prayer. But we were talking about, and Jan talked about this a couple of weeks ago, that prayer is about building relationship, having a conversation, talking to God about everything, just like Glenn did before in the prayer. Bringing our whole self to God. I read this week that prayer is the serious business of bringing our lives before God. It's not light, it's serious. It is our whole being. Allowing space for God to minister to us in that. Allowing God to minister to us so we actually can be beautiful people in the true sense of the word. Beautiful inside and out. It is in that space that our anxiety can actually be truly removed. That we can feel that sense of joy. So that 5 minutes on the drive home, or longer as it probably should be, you need time to do this well. Do you know that anxiety is an attempt to carry the burden of life, both the present and the future? That's what someone had written. I'd like to add past as well. It's an attempt to carry the burden of life. But prayer is yielding to it and leaving it in the safe hands of God. We have a God that loves us immensely. We have Jesus. We have a cross up there to remind us that Jesus took that burden, took those very things that create anxiety in us, and He carried them. So instead of us being hunched over by the weight of our life and our worries, Jesus took all of that, of everyone ever in history, on Himself when He hung on the cross. All the pain, all the torment, all the weight, all the worry, everything. He took it all. We've got to give it. We've got to release it and allow Him to take it. Instead of carrying it around ourselves, Jesus says, cast your burdens on Me. Because My yoke is easy and My burden is light. The people that do this well, the people that give it up to God, I call psychologists, I think, from what I can gather, call it self-actualizers. Some people that do it well, people that manage to roll with the punches well, are called self-actualizers. They're the ones that live in ambiguity well. But I think we need to call ourselves Christian actualizers. They're the people that develop the capacity to trust through our life of prayer. As our capacity to trust expands, our trust of God, our trust in His goodness, our trust in His ability to carry our load, as that expands, as we see Him carry through on His promises, then our tolerance for uncertainty and ambiguity increases. Because we know God's got our back. We know we're not alone. We know our prayers are not empty. They're heard and they're answered. There is another thing that we can do. Paul kind of finishes with this. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable. If anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. When you're in the midst of anxiety and despair, what do we tend to think about? We think about the things we're worried about, don't we? We cycle them round and they just run around and round and round and they eat us up. It tells us who we are. That we are hopeless, that we are worthless, that we are no good, that we can't do this, that no one will like us. So we put stuff on Facebook to let everyone else think that we're great. So that maybe they will like us. We need to change the dialogue in our heads. We need to start thinking about the good things, the amazing things that happen that are there, even if we can't see them. The people that said nice things to us, the great things that have happened in our lives, we need to focus on them. That helps us roll with the punches. That helps us to think more positively. That helps us to deal with those things that get us down. When we think about the great things that we have in our world, our amazing families, our friends, this church, you know, when I look around at this church, when I see all your faces, I see beautiful people. I do, believe it or not, I do. You are beautiful outside and you are beautiful inside. You are amazing. I see beauty in the truest sense of the world. You know, the beauty that I see is the way you look after each other and the way you care for each other, the way you support each other. The way when someone's sick or someone they love is hurting, you call them, you rock up to them and talk to them, you carry their load with them, that you help them. The way you look out for each other, the way you contact me or Glenn when someone hasn't been here for a few weeks. You say, did you notice? You noticed. The way you support each other in your life groups. The way you care for me and for Vicky and for Glenn and Vicky. And for Zoe and Jacob. And I won't say all my kids' names. I see it. I see the love of God pouring out of you into the world around you. And if that doesn't give you something great to focus on, you need to see it. One of the best things to help you see joy, to be gentle, to not be anxious, is these positive affirmations. Not only do I see the beautiful people in this room, beautiful faces, beautiful hearts, but God sees you. God sees who you are. Did you know that what God sees when he looks at you, regardless of how you feel about yourself, regardless of what other narrative is going on in your life, is he sees the most beautiful person in the world. Every single person, he sees that. He sees someone that he loves immensely. He sees someone that he is willing to die for over and over and over again. Hopefully not too many times. He sees someone that is the embodiment of perfection. He loves you and He cares for you. He wants the best for you. He wants you to experience joy and love and hope and peace. He wants you to experience shalom. He wants you to experience the life that He can give. Will you please pray with me? God, sometimes it's so hard to see past our problems, the things that make us anxious. And sometimes it feels like we're just not good enough to talk to you about our worries, which builds on our anxiety again. Help us to see that we are beautiful, that we truly are beautiful. We don't have to manage our image. We don't have to market ourselves. But that you see us as holy, worthy people, valued above anything else in this world. Bring that into us in our prayer times. Bring us that into us now. As we think on this in this service, for the rest of this service, as we think on this as we go home, gradually help us to believe what you think about us. Help us to know that it is true. Not to dwell on the things that we worry about, but to dwell on the things that you say. Bring us life and love and joy because of that. Help us truly to experience the joy that you want to give. Lord, I thank you. We thank you for doing this. We pray these things in Jesus' holy name. Amen.